back, everybody. Welcome back for another trip down to Pine Ridge. I have a long bit to read here. In fact, I actually pre-recorded it because I knew it was going to be long, and I wanted to condense it as much as I could. This is from the Jot Up Down Journal. We'll tell you what, let me just cue this up and play it, and I will tell me all about it. So, take it away, me.
Keith, don't you need to step inside the closet first?
What do you mean, go in the closet?
You know, so you can make a phone call.
Oh, I don't know what you're talking about. Why do I need to make a phone call from here?
Like you did last week.
I don't know what you mean. Anyway.
Like you did last week, go back and listen to it.
Wait, okay, yeah, listen to the last show. Anyway, here we go. Here's this long bit from a Jot Up Down Journal. And as I said, take it away, me. From the Jot Up Down Journal of June 1999. Here's an article. I believe it's entitled Lum and Abner 20th Anniversary Monument. It starts out by saying, and I may have to paraphrase some of this because it is kind of long. It starts out with, on a blazing hot June afternoon 20 years ago in 1979, a crowd gathered on the edge of Mina's beautiful Jansen Park to witness the unveiling of a 6-foot-high slab of granite. It was time to dedicate the monument, and the most honored guest of all was Chet Locke himself. Norris Goff had passed away only 1 year earlier, and Chet Locke seemed to be keenly feeling this loss. Mina businessman George Pennick stood at the podium and delivered an introduction. I'll read part of this because it summarizes the history of Lum and Abner. Along the way, he repeated some of the same misinformation that has been given out for years. In previewing this article, there's only maybe two major tidbits that he kind of gets slightly off. But I think in the times since 1999, when this Jot 'em Down Journal was posted, everyone understands the truth behind those former errors. It all started back in 1931 when radio was in its infancy and lasted for 25 glorious years. Chester Locke, better known as Lum, and Norris Goff, Abner, had finished college to marry and settle down, they thought, in Mina. They soon after that began entertaining their friends by impersonating two lovable old fellows from the hill country. After a few public appearances, their folksy humor was brought to the attention of a radio station, and they were invited to broadcast their skit over the station once a week. Now, here's a bit of the error. Actually, Locke and Goff first got attention with the blackface routine. Only after they arrived at their radio station did they switch over to those rural characters. Although it is probably true that they have experimented with those voices in private, back to the speech. After only 5 broadcasts, they were invited to Chicago for an audition with NBC. They signed a contract for 13 weeks, sponsored by the Quaker Oats Company. Soon after that, they took a leave of absence from their jobs here in Mina and moved to Chicago to begin one of the longest careers in the history of radio. In 1937, Lum and Abner moved to Hollywood, where, in addition to their 5 nights a week of broadcasting, they made 12 movies. Here's another correction to that. They actually made only 7 feature films, but the often quoted number of 12 may be meant to include their short subject appearances. Lum and Abner are credited with a number of firsts. They made the first major network broadcast in 1933 from Radio City in New York. They made the first marathon broadcast for charity, lasting for over 12 hours. They did the initial show for the Mutual Radio Network, and the first international radio broadcast by a comedy team, with Lum broadcasting from London and Abner doing his part from Chicago. He says they always developed their own program material, and they seldom had a definite word-for-word program for each broadcast. Locke and Goff provided all the voices, at least in especially those early days. Eventually, of course, they would have other actors come in. He wraps up by saying, "Mr. Locke, the citizens of Mena and Pope County have put a lot of work and devotion to make this monument a reality." And the inscription reads, "In 1931, two new voices came across the airwaves to American radio audiences. These were the voices of Lum and Abner. These two young men from Mena, Arkansas, captured the hearts of young and old alike. Lum and Abner and all the characters from Pine Ridge and the Jot 'em Down store delighted these audiences from 1933 until 1955, when they finally locked up the old Jot 'em Down store. They were able to combine their natural talents into one of the most successful acts in American show business, both then and now. This monument is dedicated by the people of Mena and Pope County in appreciation of Mr. Chet Locke Lum and Mr. Norskoff Abner." The cloth was pulled away, and now all could see the monument. More than one person has commented that this monument looks disconcertingly like a tombstone, and some out-of-town visitors have been heard to wonder aloud if this spot is where Locke and Goff are buried. Now, with the memorial in full swing, Chet Locke made his way to the microphone and spoke to the assemblage in a voice that trembled with both age and emotion. "Friends and fellow townsmen, friends from out of town, I am deeply touched by this gesture of recognition. Lum and Abner have received many citations and awards during our career, but nothing could surpass this monument dedicated to Lum and Abner. My only regret is that Tuffy cannot be here today to accept this award with me, but I know that he is looking down from above and is as thrilled and as filled with pride as I am. And when I thank you on behalf of myself, I thank you on behalf of Tuffy. I'm so glad that so many of our family could be here."
After acknowledging several family members and friends, Chester Law continues,
"And last but certainly not least, my lovely wife, Harriet, who has been my inspiration and nagger for 52 long years. I haven't had a chance to read this monument. They had it covered up, but I see that pigeons haven't found it yet. But I want to thank you for this wonderful gesture, and it means so much more coming to me from my hometown. As far as I know, this is only the second hometown that ever erected a monument in honor of anyone in the entertainment business. And we have some pretty fancy company there. Will Rogers has a monument over in Claremore, Oklahoma. I believe there's a monument in Times Square to George M. Cohan, but he's not so much an entertainer as he was a songwriter. But nothing will perpetuate them as much as this monument. So Lum and Abner, thanks to you good people, will live forever. I just wish I had the words to express my gratitude. But in behalf of Tuffy Goff and myself, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. And I mean it. I love you." And about to weep openly, Chet sat down. After a representative of the Optimist Club made an attempt to end the ceremony, Chet returned to the microphone. He acknowledged some omissions in his previous speech and did a bit more reminiscing. And here's what he said. Speaking extemporaneously, I, of course, forgot to mention a few things. We have some very special friends here who have had a lot to do with Lum and Abner. Our head writer for many years, Roz Rogers, and his lovely wife, Doris, who still reside in California. I think Roz understood and loved the characters of Lum and Abner just as much as Tuffy and I did. They were not just characters, they were people to us. There's Opie Cates and his wife from Offutt, Oklahoma. Opie was the orchestra leader on our 30-minute shows, and he also played a comedy part. And he's one of the finest clarinet players in America. When we rehearsed, the studio would be filled with musicians from other bands who would come in there just to witness his mastery of the clarinet. He's from Clinton, Arkansas, and he says it just that way. I'm sure he said it just however, but I tried.
Apparently directing attention to Clarence Hartzell.
And one of the best actors one ever had the privilege to work with. We admired his work for many years when he played the part of Uncle Fletcher on the Vic and Sage show. Tuffy had to take a few months off for a very serious cancer operation at one time, and I don't know what we would have done if it had not been for Clarence Hartzell, who played the part of Ben Withers. I think we were able to cover up Tuffy's absence during that period of time by talking to him on the phone over at his house and giving reasons why he was out of town or something. And that took a bit of clever writing on the part of Roz Rogers. But outside of Tuffy Goff, there's one of the greatest performers I've ever had the chance of working with. We spent a very interesting 18 to 20 years. I've forgotten how long it was in Hollywood. We went there in 1937 and left there in 1955. You figure it out. I'm not that quick. But we couldn't have chosen a more interesting period. It was just as talking pictures were coming into being, and a lot of the old silent movie stars were still there and being idolized by not only Hollywood, but all over the world. A lot of you don't remember those names, but they are still revered in Hollywood. And then came a new galaxy of stars, like Clark Gable, Bob Taylor, Barbara Stanwyck, Alice Faye, Irene Dunne, Tyrone Power, Don Ameche, Betty Grable, and we got to know these people. It was the most interesting experience I've ever had. There was a camaraderie between people in the entertainment business out there. Nobody was a stranger. If you were in pictures or in radio, you had something in common, you were accepted immediately. It was a wonderful experience. But everything must come to a close. But I'll tell you, Tuffy has passed on, but his memory will live forever. Thank you for this wonderful occasion. I can't possibly express my appreciation. And this time, he was through with his speech, but no one realized just what an historical occasion it had been. Less than 8 months later, Chet Lock would too be gone.
All right, and here we go. Without any further ado, we have this Lum and Abner episode from November the 9th, 1949. Lum writes an opera. You'll find a lot of similar gags from the past where Lum writes plays and things. Except for, I don't think he ever wrote an opera. So, this will be interesting. Let's listen in, shall we?
I'm lost and forlorn, wish I'd never been born, since they cut down the old pine tree.
The Lum and Abner Show, on the air for Frigidaire. Frigidaire, a division of General Motors, presents a brand new comedy show with Miss Edna Best, Andy Devine, Miss Zazu Pitt, music by Opie Cates, and starring Lum and Abner.
Hey, Abner, why wasn't you at the meeting of the Pine Ridge Culture and Uplifting Society last night?
Well, where'd they have it?
Where we always have it, at the pool hall.
Oh, yeah.
Abner, it's terrible. There just ain't no excuse for the lack of culture around here. And I told them so last night.
You did, huh?
Yes, sir. I stood right up flat-footed and demanded that Pine Ridge have a higher standard of ignorance.
Good for you.
Fellow members, I said the citizens of Pine Ridge is just plain ignorant. And I'm going to set an example for you.
You're just a feller can do it, too.
Thank you. So after the meeting was over, I went right home and wrote an opera.
Yeah, well, that was... Wrote an opera?
Why, sure.
In one evening?
Why, of course, it weren't nothing for a feller of my combined talents and genius.
What kind of an opera is it? Horse or soap?
No.
I like them horse operas. That Hopalong Cassidy, he's my favorite.
Wait a minute, Abner. I'm talking about singing opera.
Oh, Hoppy don't sing.
I know it.
His horse ain't bad.
I'm talking about grand opera, and mine is grand.
Oh, prattle, prattle. Folks don't care nothing about opera these days.
Oh, no. I read the other day when the opera opened in New York, the house was packed.
Had it in a packing house, huh?
No, silly. I bound you someday my opera will be playing in New York, too. Who knows? Someday I might wind up in the Met.
I don't doubt... Met! Thought you said Met.
I'll be in the Hall of Fame. They might even make a bust of me.
Yeah, if you don't beat them to it.
All right, Smarty. Just wait till the night of my opera. When folks see me all decked out in my arpeggios, standing up there on my cadenza with my proscenium arch, they'll know Pine Ridge is in for a load of culture.
Mr. Beef Oven, how's the opera?
Everything's going fine, except for one little thing.
What's that?
The tickets ain't selling.
Well, that's the safest way to have it.
I can't understand it. I've put every ounce of talent I've got in this opera.
Maybe a ounce ain't enough.
I've put my heart and soul in it.
Don't sound like much of a cast. Offhand, I'd say folks would rather see actors. What you need, Lum, is a big star.
Yeah, well, wait a minute. Grannies, Abner, I believe you've given me an idea.
Well, good for me.
I know how I can get this opera of mine to play the standing room.
You mean you're going to take out all the seats?
Well, I'm going to do like they do in New York. Get me an opera star. That'll sell tickets.
Now, where can you get an opera star that'll sell tickets? Most of them want to sing.
I know that, Abner. What I'm talking about is singers like Gladys Warthouse, Kirsten Flagstaff. I might try for one of them men operatics like Florence Tidbit.
He sounds nice.
I'll tell you who I wish I could get. Caruso.
Who's he?
Who is he? Now, Abner, there's a perfect example of the kind of ignorance that prevails around here. Never heard of Caruso.
Well, I'm sorry. What's his first name?
Robinson.
Why, sure. What's the matter with me? Him and Friday was in the original cast of South Pacific.
Wait a minute. Yonder comes Opie Cage. Now, I've got the Silver Cornet Band to play for the opera, and Opie's going to be my conductor.
Conductor?
Why, sure. You can't have an opera without a conductor.
Oh. Going to take the show on the road, huh?
No.
If you wanted a conductor, why didn't you get old Joe Davis at the county seat? He's with the Southern Pacific for 40 years.
I mean a musical conductor.
Why, he's musical. He always whistles while he's taking up tickets. Hello?
Oh, howdy, Opie. How's the band practice going at the firehouse?
Well, pretty good, Lum. Except last night, we had a little accident.
Accident?
Yeah, you see, Asri Seastrunk was practicing on his tuba when somebody turned in the fire alarm.
Uh-oh.
Tom Foster slid down the pole right into the tuba. He rammed that thing clear down old Ezra's throat.
Why, that's terrible. How's he going to eat?
Well, that was kind of a problem at first, but finally, they just filled it up with soup and flushed it.
Now, that's what I call clear thinking. What the hell a feller comes to take up playing something like that anyway?
Oh, fellers has different reasons, I guess. I took up the saxophone once, but I had to give it up. scratched my mouth all out of shape.
Oh, that's a shame.
Took me 2 years before I found out I'd been blowing that thing on the wrong end.
Well, Opie, how come you to take up the clarinet?
Well, you see, one time over at Ed Earl Bidball's store over in Clinton, they had a clarinet on the punch board, and Earl gave it to me.
Well, that was mighty thoughty of him. Did that start your musical career?
Of course not. Now, who ever heard of anybody playing a punch board?
Well, what about the clarinet?
Oh, I took that and enrolled in the Clinton Conservatory of Music.
The Clinton Conservatory? Now, wait a minute. Opie, did any famous singers ever graduate from there?
Yeah, there was one fellow graduated from there that went pretty far. He even made a lot of phonograph records.
Oh, that's wonderful, Opie. Reckon you could get him to come sing in my opera?
Oh, sure, I know I can. I got to go over to Clinton anyway. I'll bring him back this afternoon.
Well, good for you. Now, you're sure he's a big star?
Oh, yeah. I got one of his new records just the other day.
Granny's Opie, you've saved my life. Yeah, get on over there and get him if you have to kidnap him.
Uh-huh.
And hurry. Recollect the opera's tomorrow night.
Oh, don't you worry. I'll have him here.
Oh, just a second, Opie. I want to get that record of his and play it. What's the name of it?
I don't know.
You don't know? You played it, didn't you?
Yeah, but I couldn't read the label because the record was going around so fast.
Hot dog, Abner. These tickets are going like hotcakes since I announced we're going to have a big opera star.
Yeah, some opera star. Don't even know his name.
Well, that don't make no difference, as long as folks knows he's a big star.
Yeah, well, I reckon you're right. Here comes Luke Spear, and from the rate he's traveling, he must have heard about it.
Has that knuckle-headed nephew of mine been in here?
Why, yeah, Luke, he was...
Well, where is he? I'm going to wring his neck.
Lom sent him to Clinton to get an opera star.
Opera star? That's just dandy. He better get one that knows how to wash dishes. He left a pile of them a mile high in my restaurant.
Well, just calm yourself down, Luke. He'll be right back. By the way, would you like a couple of tickets for my opera?
No. I hear enough bellering at my restaurant about the food.
Well, now, Luke, you owe it to yourself to see this opera. I'm presenting the tragic story of Samson and Delilah.
I don't care if you're presenting Sam and Antonio. If he ain't back here by supper time, I'll pulverize him.
Wait, Luke, don't run off mad. Now, if you won't jump on, Opie, I'll give you 2 tickets to the opera.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Lum. I'll enjoy it.
Enjoy it? Thought you said you hated opera.
I do, but this one will be a pleasure.
Huh?
I just blew the tube in my hearing aid.
Let's see now. The costumes is all here. The cast is casted. Tickets all printed. Granny's Abner, I wish Opie'd get back here. I'm just dying to know who my big star is.
That would be sort of nice, yeah. He must be pretty good, though, if he makes records for the gramophone.
Wait a minute. Here comes Miss Pitts. She must be coming over to do a little rehearsing.
Rehearsing?
Yeah, she's playing the female feminine leading lady.
Opie, he's going to be busy, ain't she?
Well, come in, Miss Pitts. How's my singing leading lady today?
I'm feeling just fine. And how are you, my dear Mr. Edwards?
Oh, just dandy.
And how is your little partner, Mr. Peabody?
This is making me a little sick.
Abner, would you cut that out?
Well, it is.
Well, Miss Fitz, we better get started rehearsing. We got a lot of work to do.
Oh, my, yes. Isn't it thrilling, Mr. Edwards? Imagine, me on the stage. It takes my breath away.
Too bad it keeps coming back.
Now, that'll be enough out of you.
Oh, Mr. Edwards, I'm so proud of you. Writing an opera. Who knows, you may compose sonatas, cantatas, and concertos like Mozart.
Well, that stuff might be all right for Mo, but I figured on writing music.
You know, the thing that touches me most is that you chose me to play the leading role of Delilah. Why? I'm not very young.
Oh, sure you are.
I'm not glamorous.
Yes, you are.
I'm not beautiful. Well, don't stop now. Keep arguing.
Take my word for it. You fit the part perfect. Now, Miss Pitts, would you mind loosening your vocal cords?
Why, Lum Eddard, you old rascal.
I mean, would you mind doing some vocal exercises?
Oh.
Now, let me hear you sing the scale.
Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do.
Just a little higher, please.
Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do.
Higher.
Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do.
Now, Abner, look what you've done. You sprang my leading lady's voice box. Miss Pitt, speak to me. Speak to me.
I can't. I've lost my voice. Oh, dear, now I can't sing.
Oh, this is terrible. Now what am I going to do?
Well, with a leading lady without a voice and a leading man without a name, about all you can do is put on the Phantom of the Opera. No, Lum, I will not do it. I will not play the part of Delilah.
Abner, you've got to. I'm in a spot.
No.
But, Abner...
I ain't done yet. No!
I've auditioned everybody around. Abner, you just wouldn't believe the sounds that come out of some human being.
Hey, you fellas!
I see what you mean.
Hello, Andy.
Lum, I just dropped in to buy two seats for the opera.
Two seats? Ain't you going to take nobody with you?
There ain't no sense in buying tickets, Andy. There ain't gonna be an opera.
Oh, but I heard you got a big star.
I have, but I just lost one of my leading characters.
Oh, that's too bad. Say, Lem, maybe I could fill the part.
Fill it? You'd overflow it.
Now, you hold on there, Abner. I've got hidden talent.
Andy, they're not hidden. They're just scattered all over the land.
Abner, it might work. And I'm just desperate enough to take a chance.
Lom, he can't sing. His voice sounds like somebody throwed a handful of gravel into a mix master.
Now, there ain't nothing wrong with my voice. Just the other day, I was singing in the shower and I hit a high C.
Well, that's an awful high note, Andy. Do you think you could do it in the opera?
Sure, if you got a hot water pipe for me to back into.
Well, anyway, Andy, you get the part. You'll make a wonderful Delilah.
Well, thanks, Mom. I... Delilah?
Yeah. See, Miss Pitt's come down with a case of laryngitis.
Oh. A whole case? When are we going to open it?
Andy, you're replacing Miss Pitt.
Oh, but, Mom, I can't play the part of a woman. Everybody'd laugh at me.
No, they won't. We'll put a wig on you and a lot of makeup. They won't even know it's you.
Till you open your mouth to sing.
I don't want to do it.
But, Andy, you're perfect for the part. You know how Delilah cuts off Samson's hair?
Oh, sure, but...
Well, you're a barber. It'll be great advertising for you.
I know, but I...
I'll tell you what, Andy. We'll have the address of your barber shop sewed on the back of your costume.
Well, all right, Lum. I'll do it. Gosh, imagine me an opera singer. On the road to Mendeley, where the pieces play.
That voice is more likely what drove them flying fish out of the river, too.
Opie, you're back.
Yep, I made it.
You just did. Where's the big singing star? Now, don't tell me you didn't find him.
Oh, he's here. He's waiting out.
Standing. Well, howdy do, sir. As impresario of the Pine Ridge Opera, it is a pleasure and an honor to welcome a musical obligata of your standing. Our fair city is yours. Your wish is our command. Anything you want, you have but to speak.
Can I take off my shoes? My feet are killing me.
What?
It's the buttons on them. I ought to have them sent over.
Granny, Opie, this is the big singing star?
Yeah, he's pretty famous, too.
Famous? Say, who in the world are you?
Tennessee Ernie.
Curtain 5 minutes.
Hey, Abner, have you seen that Tennessee Ernie?
I think he's in his dressing room.
Well, I got to go talk to him.
Yeah, well, before you do, Lom, give me a hand lacing Andy into this corset.
Oh, I don't know why I ever agreed to be Delilah.
Now, just be quiet, Andy. Now, take a deep breath. Hey, quick, Lom, grab that lace, and I'll grab this. Come on, Lom, throw that stuff. Yeah, there you are now, Andy. Now, let out your breath. Here we go again.
You take care of him, Abner. I got to find Ernie.
All right. Okay, Delight. Pull it in again.
Say, Tennessee Ernie.
Mr. Eggers. Shut the door. You're letting my dog growl. Miss Eggers, I'm glad you come in here. I'm having an awful time getting this makeup on my face.
Well, there ain't nothing to it.
No. I'd like to see you get your head in this little bottle.
Sake. Now, look here, Tennessee, or Ernie, or whatever your name is.
It's Tennessee Ernie. They called me that because I was born in Georgia.
Well, why don't they call you Georgia Ernie?
That'd be silly.
Blame that, Opie. I told him to get me a famous singer.
Well, I'm famous. I made a record of Mule Train.
Well, who hasn't? That don't mean nothing. Tonight you're going to be singing grand opera.
I can sing anything.
Well, it ain't the way you sing, Ernie. It's the way you talk.
I never went to school. I learned myself all I know.
It's just that you sound so country. Granny, there ain't hardly time, but I'm going to give you some lessons. You need elocution. You know what elocution is?
I ought to. I lost my daddy and two brothers that way.
I mean, we've got to improve your denunciation. Here, say this. A-E-I-O-U.
A-E-I-O-U.
You all.
I told you I was born in Georgia.
Now, try this one. The quick brown fox jumped over the lazy dog.
Whose dog is that?
It don't make no difference. Anybody's dog.
Well, it does, too. If it's one of mine, I want to know about it. I'll swap him off.
Well, it wasn't one of yours.
Must have been Sue Dabernathy's dog. Them dogs of his don't know sick'em. Now, old Sue, he's got a pretty good nose.
Wait a minute, Ernie.
Hey, Lon, the curtain's about to go up. You better get out there.
I'll be right with you, Abner. Ernie, for goodness sake, don't let me down.
No, Larry, I won't.
Hey, Lon, come on. The house is packed. Everybody in town come to see Tennessee Ernie.
Oh, goodness, where's my note?
Note?
Yeah, I'm going to narrate the opera like that feller Dean's Trailer. Oh, here they are.
Get out there on the stage, Lon.
Yeah, Granny, this is my big moment.
Yeah.
Is my hair tied, or my necktie combed, or...
Lon, now, don't lose your head.
Head? Oh, my goodness, where is it? Where is it? Oh, Abner, stop that. Now, get out of my way. Here I go.
Yeah, flaps down, kid. This is what you've been training for.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It does my heart good to know that the people of Pine Ridge is so interested in a higher type of illiteracy. And now let's start. I see that Maestro Opie Cates is ascending the podium. And from a sitting position on his podium... conducts the Pine Ridge Silver Cornet Band in the Poet and Pheasant Overture. Maestro. Thank you. Now we would like... Thank you. Now we... Thank you. Now we would like... Opie, will you cut that out? Now the house lights dim as we bring you Act One of Samson and Delilah. The curtain rises. The scene, a circus. Samson, the strong man, comes out and sings to an admiring crowd.
My name is Samson. His muscles are like steel. Got an army in my blood. And ready to kill. I'm as rugged as a polar bear. And I can lift a frigid air. The secret of my strength is in my heart.
Delilah enters. She's the tattooed lady. She's got sex appeal written all over. The tattooed lady sings.
I am Delilah, the girl with the smile. I crave the love that is tolerant. So if you want to call me, remember as I run my forehead.
Samson falls in love with Delilah. He ain't got time to buy an engagement ring, so he picks up a crowbar and bends it into the shape of a lover's mouth. He presents it to her.
I would not to marry you if I could carry you across my door. But my muscles say my hippo, cause you're heavy as a hippo.
Delilah sings her answer.
Busted ever stay in my
corset. Well, pull yourself together, Andy. You're filling up the stage. Now, where was I? Oh, yeah. Delilah tells Samson that she's in love with Bobo the clown. At this point, Bobo enters.
A reedy Aliaki.
Abner, that ain't necessary.
Maybe not, but it's the biggest laugh we've got all week.
All right, let's get on with the opera. When Delilah sees Bobo, she rushes up to him and sings an aria.
Oh, cutie pie, my heart's on fire. For you I'm yearning, my lips are burning.
To which he replies,
Chester feels satisfied. Feels over and over again.
Samson is overcame with jealousy. He grabs Bobo by the throat.
I'm gonna take you hid and feed you up.
I am not afraid of you, you lily-livered pup. Make a pretzel out of me. Oh, do not make me laugh.
Seeing that Samson is going to come between them, Bobo and Delilah decide to cut off Samson's hair so he'll lose all of his strength.
We'll cut off his hair.
He's next in my chair. I'll give him a shave at Andy's, you say. My prices are right. We're open all night.
I just said to give your address, not a spot announcement. Anyway, after all that haircutting, Samson looks like Mount Baldy. The lovers plan to escape, but the next morning they meet Samson, and he has grown a new crop of hair. They can't understand how he grew hair so fast, but he answers the question for them. He grabs Delilah by the arm.
Delilah, you're going with me.
Oh, no, I'm not. You cannot move.
Music!
Sally never stop. Clippity-clop, clippity-clop, clippity-clippity-clippity-clippity, clippity-clopping along. Mule train!
Get out!
Mule train! Clippity-clopping along the mountain chain. Clippity-clop, clippity-clop, clippity-clippity-clippity-clippity-clippity-clop and along. There's a fluffy tall actor for a miner in Corona, a guitar for a cowboy way out in Arizona, a dress mechanic toe for a pretty Navajo. Get along. Get along. Clopping through the wind and rain, they keep a going till they drop. Clippity clop, clippity clop, clippity 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 clopping along. There's some cotton thread needles for the folks to wear our standard, a shovel for the miner who left his home to wander, some rheumatism pills for the settlers in the hills. Get along. Get along. Mule train!
Get out!
You missed me.
Oh, get out! Oh, get out!
You got me there.
Mule train!
Lolly, I'm gonna take you to the preacher.
Okay, Sam.
Why the car did you bring a wagon in here for?
You forgot to take my harness off.
And so Samson unhitched Delilah and they were hitched. Soon they'd started a mule train of their own. The end.
You may have heard us mention once or twice that this fall you hear them all on CBS. This same holds true for this winter, too. Here's just a reminder of Sunday nights on CBS. Sunday nights when you hear the superb comedy parlay of Eve Arden, Jack Benny, Amos and Andy, Edgar and Charlie, Red Skelton and Corliss Archer. Then, too, there's the Family Hour, the Contented Hour and Horace Heist. Yes, this fall you hear them all on most of these same stations. The Lum and Abner Show will be back next week and every week at the same time with Andy Devine, Basil Pitt, Ben Trout, music by Opie Cates, written by Betty Boyle and Jay Summers, directed by Larry Bird. Our thanks to Tennessee Ernie, who appeared as Lum and Abner's guest tonight. Paul Masterson speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.